Hi, welcome to Voices in the Wilderness. We're a show that discusses faith questions posed by skeptics, Christians and non-Christians, people struggling to reconcile science and faith, and people going through deconstruction or reevaluation of what they believe. So we're really glad you've joined us today. We bring various voices to the conversation to open paths for those who wander to connect with Jesus along their journey. If you're watching on Facebook, or YouTube Live, feel free to put some questions in the chat boxes and we'll try to answer your questions along the way or at least talk about them. So today we have special guests, Esther and Liz, who are from Deconstructing Mamas. Esther is co-host on Deconstructing Mamas podcast, a freelance writer, speaker, and faith coach. Having been raised as a missionary kid in war-torn Ethiopia and then raising her own children in suburban New Jersey, she has a fierce passion to restore hope and healing to the sacred space where our hearts and homes meet, including faith, marriage, and motherhood. Liz is a freelance writer and podcaster known for Deconstructing Mamas podcast. She is the daughter of biblical scholar Pete Enns. I think we have a lot of fans of your fathers and who typically watch your show. Most days she can be found cleaning goldfish off the bottom of her feet. I'm assuming that means crackers rather than the actual goldfish. As she tries to keep up with her two young children, Liz is passionate about normalizing deconstruction as a crucial part of the faith process and creating a safe space for people from all walks of life to explore God in their own way. So thank you for joining us today. It's great to have you. I've stepped on a few goldfish myself. Crackers, that is.
Thanks for having us. We're excited.
They're much better than Legos or Polly Pockets.
Yes.
So why don't you start by telling us each a little bit about your faith journey? Let's start with you, Liz.
My faith journey started when I was really young. I can look back now and see that I had a lot of questions about some of the things that I was learning in Sunday school. But I didn't know then that this is where it was going to lead me. But my deconstruction journey kind of happened sort of in line with my dad's deconstruction journey that really started. I started to see that when I was in high school. And as he started to question things, I started to have kind of the freedom to question things. And things just weren't adding up to me. You know, I was told all these things when I was little that weren't really making sense in my own life. And it just caused me to question things. And so I started reading books and I started really looking into things and really studying historical accuracy of the Bible and cultural aspects of the Bible and all those sorts of things. And it led me down this sort of pathway of just starting to see God differently and realizing that there's many different ways to see God and that the box that I had kind of lived in for most of my life just wasn't the only way. So that's kind of in a nutshell.
All right. And how about you, Liz? I mean, Esther, sorry.
Okay. So you told everybody that I was a missionary kid. So born the most evangelical of evangelicals. My parents' mission was to save people from the burning, fiery torment of hell. And so with that in mind, and having been told that I had the gift of evangelism as well, when I was just a teen, I embarked sort of fully on that journey to get everybody out of hell, if that makes sense. I had some bumps along the way. In that process, just normal high school and college questioning, but never really questioned whether or not God was who he said he was, quote unquote, from the Bible, and never questioned places like hell, never questioned the inerrancy of scripture, all of those things, until everything went to, quote unquote, hell in the handbasket in my own life, being a young mom with four kids, and all the formulas that I had counted on just fell apart. And so more of a personal thing for me than an intellectual thing, and more of an emotional thing, but I am very intellectual. So I began to everything, get my hands on whatever I could read that was different. I joined a class with Pete Enns, the famous Pete Enns, Liz's dad, with a friend and got to finally ask all the questions I was not allowed to ask in church and that I personally had to shove down. So that's kind of the beginning of it. And then I found out mostly that my whole life, the systems that I had been in were based in fear and not in love. And that was exactly why I ended up in my mental health breakdown that I had, because I really was driven by fear instead of led by a place of love. So that's kind of where I am today, trying to unwind all of that.
Let's talk about deconstruction. So deconstruction is a hot topic right now. Some would say it's like the third rail of the Christian faith. I listened to you both, your podcast. I follow you, your social media online. So I know you've both been through it, or I shouldn't say been through it. I should say are deconstructing. And it makes the name of your podcast, The Deconstructed Mamas. But people have different definitions of deconstruction. So I'd love to find out, what does deconstruction mean for the two of you? Has it changed over time? If somebody asked you, what is a deconstructed mama, how would you answer that? If you want to start first, Liz, that'd be fine.
Yeah. So deconstructing mamas was something that I had thought of for like a really long time. And Esther and I have been friends. And so she kind of knew it was something that was brewing in my head. But it came out of, you know, being a mom. I'm a mom of two young kids. I have, you know, a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. And, you know, so much of what I'm doing on the day to day is navigating my own faith journey while also parenting my kids in some sort of faith or some sort of spiritual journey. And I was looking for spaces where someone would be able to help me navigate that, and I couldn't find them anywhere. And so Esther and I just created our own, which is really kind of how we got here and what deconstructing mamas means to us. But for me, deconstruction is, I think, a lifelong journey. This is something that I will always be on. And, you know, I think people immediately oftentimes think of deconstructing as a negative thing, but for me, it's been so, so positive. And mostly I've just kind of had an open mind about it. When I started deconstructing, it started really simple. You know, I was still in the church and I was still very much a part of the church, but there were certain things that I was no longer agreeing with, you know, if hell is a literal place, those types of things. And so it started there, and it's kind of snowballed into this place where, you know, I no longer am a part of a church. I'm not against going to church, but I haven't found a church where I land right now. And so a lot of what deconstructing is right now is just creating space for my journey spiritually, religiously, and also personally, and just being able to be okay with where I am and fully know and believe that God is okay with any of the spaces that I am. So I would say that I'm very much still, I'm a loose Christian, maybe. Can we call it that? I'm a loose Christian. So I feel like I'm a Christian, but I'm embarrassed to say that I'm a Christian because I'm so, dare I say, like, disgusted with some of the things that are happening in the church, the evangelical church, and just some of the things that I'm seeing. So I'm a loose Christian, but I think a lot of my former Christian friends would say that I'm not a Christian. So I guess you'll find out.
Yeah. Before we jump into Esther's answer, I just wanted to let everyone know we are streaming live on Facebook and YouTube. And if you all have a question for the Deconstructed Mamas or Christine or I, throw it on there and I'll try and get it in, although Christine and I have a lot to talk about, so hopefully we'll cover a lot of this. But what does deconstruction mean to you, Esther?
My daughter actually asked me a question about the word repent today. my daughter, she's 30. And I remember a friend of mine saying, why does everybody think repent is such this horrible word? It really just means think a new thought. And this was maybe 10, 12 years ago. And so that's kind of my view on deconstruction, is just giving space for new thoughts, new ideas, growing, learning, changing. And my big joke is, if I look over the course of my life, I don't agree with myself from 30 years ago, 25, 10, 15, even 2 years ago. I just continue to change and grow and ask questions. So for me, it really is the permission to not necessarily believe everything just because I've been told, but to move to wonder and curiosity and question all of those things in order for me, I wouldn't say to lean into truth, because then again, you're getting into like certainty, but to lean into fullness or abundance or, you know, wholeness, those kinds of things. What's more true, deeply true? Not like, did Jonah get swallowed by a whale, but what's the truth for myself? Like, how do I love well? Where does fear take me? You know, those kinds of deeper truths. So that's what deconstruction means for me.
Well, that's wonderful. We already have a comment or a question online from YouTube. Carmel Crunk, I hope I'm getting that right. Carmel Crunk asks, what's the opposite of deconstruction? And that, you know what? I'm going to just leave that open for either one of you. And we'll go to this screen. How's that?
Yeah, that's what a question that is. I'll say something real quick and then I'll let Esther take it. But you know, for me, deconstruction, for me personally, the opposite of that is just fear. Just living in fear and being held bondage by fear. And that's where I was when I wasn't deconstructing. And now I'm in a place where I'm not as held as much by fear. And so for me, that's the opposite.
That's so powerful, Liz. I love that. I don't know if I can top that. The first thing that came to my mind is just being bound, like enslaved by certainty, and making sure that we have all the right answers, which is a very fear-based place. And because if you step outside of that, then what's going to happen to you? So yeah, but I view it similarly. But yeah, I was definitely bound up in having to be right, having to know, and having to be sure of everything that's going to happen in life, almost like to a point where it's just having like OCD-ish, to bring it to mental health. Like, I have to be in control of every single thing. And deconstruction for me is kind of giving that up, giving some of that up, and leaning into a place of freedom.
I'm not a deconstructed mama, but I'm a big fan. And if I could play one on the internet for a second, I would just say, Carmel, I see deconstruction much like the ladies just commented. And to me, it's almost like spiritual growth. So the opposite to that would be like a stagnation, you know, something that you've been handed and you don't question, and you know, you just accept it, and you do learn. You have to learn all the rules and all the do's and don'ts, but you don't grow. And so to me, that would be kind of the opposite of deconstruction. I don't want to jump forward until we give Christine an opportunity either to answer that or to go on to another question.
So my first thought was stagnation also. So that's kind of not fair that you answered with my answer. But yeah, stagnation or just kind of being stuck in a rut and staying there and not desiring even to move forward. So I think it would be really sad if a person spent their whole life thinking faith thoughts that were the same as when they were a child. I mean, I know we're supposed to have a childlike faith, but I don't think that means we're supposed to remain little kids in our disposition. I mean, no one wants to hang out with a little spoiled brat, right? We're supposed to grow and become mature. And I think that applies to the way our faith changes and grows with us.
Yeah.
Well,
I like to think that I'm kind of searching for the faith that I had before I was told to have faith, right? So maybe not like the childlike faith that you had when you were 5 in Sunday school and, you know, you're afraid of all of these things happening to you if you don't say this specific prayer, but kind of before that, right? Like before anyone told us anything, what did we believe about God or what did we believe about life? And so I kind of try to tap into that a little bit, but it's tricky.
Well, There are critics out there, and I'm sure you're familiar with them because you guys have a footprint in social media.
No, there
and,
are none.
Mostly from within the church. And these critics, they don't see deconstruction as a positive thing. They dismiss it as, you know, a sexy fad or something like that. They don't see it as spiritual growth. Old schoolers would call it backsliding. Others would call it heresy or even apostasy, or you were never saved in the first place. But those who were once dismissing it as a fad, now I think are viewing it as a threat. And the Gospel Coalition has written a book. There's whole new ministries to try and kind of counter the voices, people who are seen as the voices of deconstruction. Two ends are involved in that. Liz and Pete Ends, Richard Rohr, Rob Bell, anyone who appears in the progressive maybe corner of the tent gets attacked. But I'd just like to ask you this. How should the church respond to deconstruction? If you guys had a say, if we're all sitting at a council in Jerusalem, how should the church respond to people deconstructing and possibly take this too? For those listening out there who are comfortable in their faith and they just don't get this, they don't see why something like this would be necessary for their faith tradition, how would you coach them to react to a loved one who's going through it and they ask you, we don't get this, what's going on? We're really anxious about it. You know, are they going to spend an eternity not connected to God?
Well, yeah, I think someone. Is it okay if I go? Okay. I think coming from someone who grabbed her friend from stepping off the sidewalk because I was pretty sure he was going to hell and he hadn't said the magic prayer. So I remember that feeling. It's just so fearful that you are responsible to keep other people out of hell. And so I get it. I get like the idea. I've had teenagers already, you know, I've had raised teenagers where your kids differentiate from you and think different thoughts than you. And it's scary because the world is a scary place and you just want what's best for them. And if it's being held over you and you believe that there's a fiery torment at the end of it all for those you love, of course you should be doing this. You should be freaking out. And I was freaking out, but I guess the best thing I would suggest, just like in any relationship that's really coming from a place of love, which, you know, Jared Bias says you can't have love and control at the same time. You really need to approach them if you possibly can without agenda, from a listening posture. And I don't know how to do that without agenda if you do have that feeling that whatever you say may send them to hell or not. But I would say if you could listen, I think the scariest thing, and I think people do this with teenagers, shut them down, don't open up conversation, and then those kids don't feel safe to share. And so I would say as church, you have to check with yourself, what are you so afraid of? And you have to say like, well, how can I love this person well? And maybe lean into, I call it turning to wonder instead of certainty. Like ask questions, put yourself in a posture of listening, become a Quaker and have that mindset like of Parker Palmer of, you know, like take a posture of listening without agenda. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, I agree with Esther. I was once one of those people, right, where I like broke up with boyfriends because I was afraid they were leading me to hell and, you know, those types of things. So I understand and empathize and, you know, friends who have taken a step back from our relationship, who have approached me with, you know, I may not understand completely where they're coming from or it may be really hurtful, but if they're approaching me with respect and just kind of sharing their voice, it's easier for me as just a human being to say, okay, I hear what you're saying. I think where it gets really hard is when, you know, people are like really nasty, especially coming out of the church, you kind of, you know, it's not helpful. So I think, you know, what I'm really looking for, you know, and what I think a lot of people are looking for in acceptance from the church is really just empathy and just allowing, you know, me to have my own journey. I'm allowing you to have your own journey. You know, I'm not expecting people to like leave the faith and come follow, you know, come follow us or whatever. It's everyone has their own journey. And so just allowing that. And I think Esther said, you know, said this too, letting go of control and letting go of that certainty. You know, none of us really know anything. I mean, we think we do and we have ideas and, you know, obviously there's science that backs that up. But for the most part, we're all kind of wandering, we're all seeking. And can we accept that? Can we accept that, you know, we don't have all the answers and allow other people to have their own ideas and opinions? So I think it's hard, like Esther said, when you feel like, you know, you have the way, like this is the way and I have the way and I know the way and everyone else is wrong. How can you actually have a relationship with somebody who believes things different than you if you're not even willing to like lay down your own certainty?
So deconstruction can lead to deconversion. Sometimes it does, but it doesn't always, or maybe that isn't even the final destination. There could be deconversion and then reconversion, or it's a journey, like you said, and a lifelong journey. So what are some of the different ways that you've seen it play out as you've listened to people in your podcast and in your lives?
I think we've seen it all, right? I've seen people begin to deconstruct and freak out and go right back. You know, it happens to a lot of pastors, I think. They start to ask questions and then they get slapped a little bit by either their board or somebody says they're not going to give them money. And so they have to go back to that more black and white thinking because they can't really, they don't have a safe space. And then just this week, we've seen it all the way to deconversion, where I actually had somebody this past week try to convert me to atheism. He was so kind but he was so strong, and he had wanted to be a pastor, had gone to Bible college, but he just felt like he knew now that it was all terrible. And what I definitely noticed from both of those spaces is you've just traded one fundamentalism for another fundamentalism. You've traded one certainty for another certainty, and you're not able to sort of move into this messy space where I think, I don't want to speak for Liz, but Liz and I are trying to dwell, and it's very hard, into this more nuanced, grace-filled space that provides for question and curiosity. And yeah, hey, if you've totally deconverted, then I have to respect that. And I want to listen to you because maybe you have some truths to what you're saying. And maybe you over here, you very backwards person. I'm sure there are some truths, person who's gone backwards. There's some truths still in what you have to say that I'm still clinging to. You know, I'm still clinging to a lot of the faith of my childhood, especially the more healthy versions, like I heard that God loved me. I'm not going to let that one go quite yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with Esther. You know, I still very much feel like I identify with Christianity, and there's so many things about it that I love and that make sense to me, and, you know, pieces from my childhood that I'm bringing with me. And, you know, so I have chosen to continue in this particular faith because it means something to me and it feels right to me. And, you know, overall, I believe in a higher power, and I think for people that looks different. And I don't know exactly why. And, you know, I haven't unpacked all of that, but I feel like somehow it all leads us to the same God. And so I've just been really open to just embracing that idea, you know, that there's other religions and other ways of identifying with God. And like, I'm not going to shut down those relationships, you know, and just being open to them and open to people who are like, who don't want to be Christian anymore. That's fine. That's a part of their journey too, right? Like, I just want to be open. I just want to be open, you know, and I just want to be able to sit with people just in their processing and in their fears and their hopes and in their dreams, whether they no matter what they believe. You know, that's what's more important to me than anything else. And that to me feels like Jesus. And, you know, that just feels like the right thing for me.
So do you see a pattern of common reasons that people have for deconstructing?
I think people oftentimes, or at least people that we're, I mean, people that we hear from, I think a lot of times they get to this place where like, I just can't fake it anymore. This just doesn't make sense to me. And I just can't do it. I can't subscribe to some of these things that I feel are harmful or hurtful. I think with some younger parents too, especially, there's a lot of, you know, as gentle parenting is becoming sort of more of a thing that we're talking about and more of a way that we're parenting our children, I think people are realizing like, oh, some of these ways that I was parented or some of these things that I was taught as a child about how God saw me no longer makes a lot of sense with some of this sort of research that's coming out about what kids actually need. And so there's that, I think a lot is at least for kind of young parents who've grown up in the faith are thinking like, this, how can I gentle parent, but then also sort of believe all of these things that I've learned, you know, in my church or in my religion. And so that leads to deconstruction, but that's really hard because, you know, you're a young parent with young kids and you want them to know, for a lot of us, I guess, you want them to know God, but you're not sure how to bring that. It gets really complicated. So I think people kind of fall into it and then they feel stuck. And it's a hard place. So, I mean, we really want to be there to help support that. You know, I think in a lot of ways I am that person, you know, even though I'm farther along on this, whatever that means, you know, farther along on this journey. I've been doing it for a while, but still wanting to support people who are in those places because I think a lot of times you kind of stumble into it and then you just feel like you are drowning.
Right. Yeah. And I definitely think that that something, a lot of times, like what I've seen is people in ministry can't fake it. Like Liz said, you can't fake it anymore. It's like they actually go to seminary and they find out that there are different views out there, or they are going along like I was, and the formulas fall apart. And some of it is, and this is sad to say, so much church hurt. So much church hurt. Like the quote unquote toxic, and I like to call them because I don't want to bash any particular church or any particular religion, but toxic religious beliefs that are controlling and manipulative and hypocritical. Not the people. And everybody's like, oh, the church is the people. I'm like, not the people, but the systems of power and whatever it is, greed, whatever you want to say, control, play out in a very unhealthy way. And they don't want to be a part of it anymore, especially as they're raising kids or when they experience something in their life that can't be explained away. Some kind of tragedy, some kind of pain.
Let's face it. It is sometimes the people, right? It is. I mean, it's the, you read about the Southern Baptist Convention and all the sexual abuse scandals that are occurring. That's people. My kids were told by youth leaders that we're not even really Christians because we're not young earth creationists. So we're clearly not even really saved. That was people. It was systems too, but it was people.
Those people are definitely held.
Right.
Think about the people. Yeah, people are held by those systems that are put in place by other people. And so it just gets to be this weird, you know, big giant animal. And then the people at the bottom are pawns. When I look at myself, that I've had to have a lot of tenderness and forgiveness toward my former self, I was one of those people. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I was a bad person. I just think I don't know who says this, when you know better, you do better. Right, I thought I was doing what was right. Like I joke with you and you brought up the science thing, the young earth creation. I remember going through the Museum of Natural History with I had three little kids. My son wanted to see the rock collections. We live near New York City. So we went in and you had to walk through the evolution. You know, it was like the fingers touching of instead of God and man, it was a thing like at the top of the Sistine Chapel. It's like, was a monkey and a man. Oh my gosh, my evangelical garb, I freaked out. And my little daughter, six. So how indoctrinated was she? looked at my four-year-old and said, just go fast. This next section is all a lie. We're going to get to the rock soon. And like, I thought I was protecting my kids. I thought I was doing what was right. And so like, I remember going like almost fluffing my feathers, like I'm a good mom because I'm protecting them from all of the evil scientists out there. But I was told that there were evil scientists. I was told that all of that is just, you know, against God.
Let me just imagine how all those evil scientists, how are you supposed to be a Christian if you're only told you're an evil scientist?
Let me just jump in. Let me jump in for a second and say my apologies because my audio is a little bit funky. So I am an egalitarian at heart, but I do want to get a question in here or there, but I'm working on my audio. So if it's a little challenging, I'm going to let Christine kind of take over. But there's been a great conversation going on over on our YouTube channel. I'm not ignoring you all. It's just I'm trying to work behind the scenes here a little bit. Carmel chimed back in again. Based on something you said, Esther, she said an atheist recently told her that she couldn't really be a Christian because she affirmed evolution. So there is this disconnect between, you know, what at least in the West we see as true Christianity and then, you know, liberals or, you know, people who are just posing. And I know that's been a big thing for you, Christine. Christine, maybe you could share with the ladies just what your kids kind of went through at your previous church and what they were told by youth leaders. And maybe we can try and climb out of that by coming up with some solutions. I know Liz said you couldn't find a church. Are there any churches out there that are really open to people going through this process? But Christine, please jump in.
Sure. Well, I already mentioned that my kids were flat out told that by youth leaders that, you know, we're not really Christians. We're not even saved unless we hold a certain view about the age of the earth and biology. And I raised this to the youth pastor and we actually had a change of youth pastor right about that time, to the new youth pastor as well, and in the intermediate, a couple of the other pastors. I even wrote a letter to the elder board. And, you know, nobody was willing to come back and tell my kids, oh, you know, really, salvation is by faith. It's by grace. You know, your view of biology doesn't impact your salvation. But they wouldn't do that. And my kids just kind of like stopped going to church. And I mean, like I was going to make them go to a place that tells them they're not saved. How are they going to have any spiritual growth in that kind of environment anyhow? And right about at this time, COVID started. So then, you know, we just didn't go to church for a while and watched different congregations and services online and tried some other things. So I know that the science piece hasn't been a really big factor for you, but I'm sure you've heard from people. You know, like my younger daughter, she's studying nursing right now, and she was taking her first biology, college level biology class. And she was about 16 at the time. And she came to me and she's like, Mom, like I knew that biology, we were going to talk about evolution, but I had no idea that biology is evolution. Like that's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's all evolution. That's exactly what biology is. It's just the way evolution works. And, you know, why don't they tell you this? And, I was just really glad we'd already had some conversations at home about how we don't need to be afraid of what we're learning in science. That's just a marvelous and wondrous exploration of, you know, whatever topic you're studying. And, you know, it didn't seem to cause a big faith crisis for her, thankfully. But it wasn't very helpful to her at church to be told that, you know, she's not really a Christian.
Staying with the evolution thing for just a second. Esther, I kind of relate to what you went through, because as a parent growing up, I was kind of a Christian nationalist pastor until I went through an awakening. And I remember, you know, preaching against evolution as, you know, the evils of all the universe. And I got to a point, it was actually reading Francis Collins' book. And I just want to say this while Liz is on. There were two main voices that helped me deconstruct, and one was Francis Collins, and the other one is your father, Peter Enns. But I was reading Francis Collins' book, The Language of God, and I got to the chapter comparing the chromosomes between the chimpanzee and the human. My wife was next to me. I closed the book, and I said, I feel like I just got kicked in the, I'll clean it up, in the stomach. And I was such a reluctant convert. I said, honey, the evidence is overwhelming. I've been wrong all this time. And a few weeks later, I sat my teenage boys down on the couch and I apologized. I said, I just want to tell you, you don't have to believe what I believe now. I said, you know, look into it yourself, but I've been wrong all this time. And I just want to apologize to you. So here's what I want to ask you two. You're at different shall we say, level, eras of parenting. Esther, I'm closer to you. Liz, you've got young ones, you've got littles. So I'd like to hear from both of you, what has been your experience in deconstructing? Esther, maybe you first with older children, and then Liz, was it helpful to you to have people in your family that were deconstructing at the same time, your father and so forth? I mean, how helpful was that to you? And then we'll circle back around for those people who are deconstructing, who's don't may not have anyone in the family who understands or who is walking that journey with them. So I guess for you first, Esther, how has it been your experience?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, I have kids filled with grace, and I've gotten a lot of permission to be myself. I think that they just sort of followed along and watched, and it really came to a head, especially as my oldest was entering into college, and as my youngest was, I think, only 10 at the time, where I started my husband first. He found out about Richard Rohr. And so he began his own journey and let me ask questions. It's kind of funny, like I feel a little bit like I was slowly brought to the light over time, but I think that not to the light, but to a better place, I would say, than I was. But my kids, just giving them opportunity then to question. My daughter has come on our podcast, and just the fact that we've gotten to do this together is huge. And I think as soon as a parent, any parent of any age or any stage, allows opportunity for curiosity and questioning, and that you're not in the right all the time, it's going to change everything about your relationship, not just quote unquote religion. It gives everybody a voice in the household. And it gives everybody a posture of becoming, and this is my daughter, she's a teacher. Her mantra in her classroom is, I am a learner and I am a teacher. And if that's the mantra that you can have with your family, no matter what, I think what happened from me changing to going in this is I moved from, I am the teacher, you are the learners, to we are both learners. We are all learners and teachers, and every voice matters at the table. And it changed everything. And so I don't know where everyone is exactly in their faith. I have kids that range from still very conservative, I think, in his mind, to kind of where I am, and some that are even beyond me. So, and that's great. I don't care. It's been fantastic. I just love them because they're them and not because they believe the same things I do.
Yeah, me. Am I up? deconstructing alongside of my dad, and you know, my siblings, I think too, are deconstructing in their own ways, and my mom has deconstructed in some of her own ways, and so really, we're kind of a family of wanderers, which is really, really cool. But you know, having that permission from people you love to go on this journey is, you know, I don't take that lightly. You know, I know a lot of people don't have that. And just having lost friendships through this process and how devastating that's been, I can only imagine how devastating it is to feel like you're losing your family in it as well. I think regardless, I probably would have ended up here. I'm really stubborn. I have this, I have to be vulnerable. Like, I cannot fake it. I just can't do it. And so I would be here anyways, but to have the support of my family and, you know, specifically my dad, he's obviously sort of in this arena of changing the conversation around Christianity and around the Bible. And, you know, obviously I'm there too. And so to have his support and his backing and to be able to text him, you know, random questions that I have that, you know, he knows better than I do because of things he studied, it has been really helpful. And I think has probably accelerated some of my deconstructing and, you know, led me to a place where I'm mostly pretty comfortable with where I am and pretty comfortable with just kind of sitting in uncertainty. But the support, you know, the support is really huge and not everyone has that. It's hard.
So one of the things I've noticed for my kids is how different their journey is from mine. You know, I like struggled on my own to work through the science and faith issues that were in my arena, just with my schooling and my job and the stuff that I work on, and shared my journey with them. And they're like, totally okay with the science faith thing. That's not where they have issues, because they're just like, oh, well, I mean, we can be Christians and we can accept evolution. And that's just not, an issue, right? They have other places where they wrestle and are working through their own ideas. So how do you see that, like, with your kids, Esther, since they're a little bit older than Liz's? How is their journey similar or different from yours?
Yeah, it's funny because I always say the tale of two parenting, my older two and my younger two, such different journeys. And I think the older two were definitely under more of an evangelical fundamentalist toxic religious house, even though we didn't know that it was. And my younger two sort of pushed the envelope, and they were part of the reason why we deconstructed. I remember saying to my son, and maybe I was changing at the same time. He was 13, doing the typical 13-year-old pushback. This is my third. And he said something about evolution, something. And I looked at him and I said, what if you're right? And I think he was like, whoa. And that was the posture I took from then on. What if you guys are right? And I'm the one that has something to learn. And so I think that then everybody else sort of got permission. But yeah, and Liz is really close friends with my oldest daughter. She has a lot more to unpack than my youngest. I have a girl, two boys, and another girl. My youngest daughter doesn't have the same stuff. She's like your kids. She's 22. She doesn't have that. She grew up with a different mom. She grew up in a different house. So they're just unpacking different things at different times. And we are all learning and growing from each other, which is the beauty of it.
I think one of the things that some of my atheist friends wonder about, and, you know, I think your father made a video about this, Liz, why am I still a Christian? I think they feel that they've been on the same journey as we have. And they think we're just maybe a block or two behind them, that eventually we're going to end up at the same, you know, park bench when it comes to theism. And they're looking at us like we're still growing, but why are we clinging to this? And I want to share with you right now, before I formulate this whole question, somebody who has deconverted, a YouTube personality, you know, Rhett McLaughlin of Good Mythical Morning, but he said something really powerful when giving his deconversion testimony, and I'll just share it with you here. He said, your kids are not leaving the church because you didn't train them enough. Your kids are leaving the church because you trained them well enough to develop a sense for truth and justice. You let them read the words of Jesus and they got it. And they've recognized that the church doesn't seem to be interested in those words. They're not leaving because they don't know the truth. They're leaving because they do. That's a powerful statement, and it's one that really resonates with a lot of the people we deal with who are nuns and duns and seekers and atheists and agnostics who are on the same path, the same journey toward truth, I'd like to think. But how much of your work, I know in what you, I'd be curious in how you choose your guests. They're also positive and encouraging voices, as you say, with grace and space. So let me ask you this in this manner. What Rhett is referring to here is kind of the disconnect between being biblical and being Christ-like. And I know you've talked about this on your podcast. How big a hindrance is a literal or almost kind of a biblicism, bibliolatry? How big an obstacle is that for Christian growth? And how off-putting is that for others looking in the stained glass window?
Liz.
Me? Okay.
Yeah. Only because I would just say, Liz, you answer it because I think that pertains to you. That statement from Rhett McLaughlin is probably exactly where you are. So go ahead.
Yeah,
Liz.
It's really, really tricky. I stay, Christian, if you will, and I stay kind of in that space because I want to. I don't feel like anyone's telling me to. I don't fear rejection if I leave. I'm already sort of like straddling four different lines right now anyways. But I resonate with Christianity in some part of my being. And so that's why I am there. So I don't feel like I'm somehow being held or manipulated or, I'm open to other things, but this is where God is for me. So this is where I am. So that's kind of, I guess, the answer to that piece of the question. But in terms of the Bible and how it can be a hindrance, I think that people don't know how to read the Bible. And I think I'm for sure one of those people. And so we read it and we get sort of misinformation and if based on our own interpretations, and if we're not really willing to, realize that we are filtering what we are reading, because that's what everybody does, right? We all filter information. If we're not really, really willing to look at that, then we're not going to get the whole picture. And so, I love the Bible. I think it can be this really cool and beautiful story that gives us a lot of information, and can be really powerful. But I think that it has become a weapon, and, I think it's a major hindrance. I mean, I have stepped away from reading the Bible, like I used to. I don't read the Bible with my own children, just because I feel like it's just not age appropriate for them. That's kind of my personal choice. And so, I don't read the Bible with them. I focus on things that are more important. I think, living a Christ-like life to me is more important than ever opening your Bible. And I think, I can't wait to see the messages I get from that statement. I just think that if I never opened my Bible again, but I was living, a Christ-like life where I was, honoring myself and others and loving others and living with empathy and, all of these things that I think that Christ kind of showed us about living, then to me that's what I want my kids to carry into their later life too.
It's interesting that you said about the biblical verse, the biblicist versus the Christ-like, the biblical versus the Christ-like, and that statement by Rhett. I think that's why my kids deconstructed, and it's probably why I am. I did grow up with the idea that Jesus was like all about truth and justice and sort of change and redemption and healing. And so of course that's why when I see something that's harmful and I see something that's vitriolic and hateful and that doesn't match Jesus, I am going to start to question that. Why wouldn't I? And my goodness, just having a conversation today about every time someone tries to convince me back the well-meaning friends that I have and family that I have that are so afraid of me having gone down this, all they talk about is the Bible. This lines up with the word of God. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And how can you not see that you're holding the Bible up as the final authority in your life instead of God or Jesus? Like, you've lost the whole thing. And then I think, like, why have I not become an atheist for all your people who are out there who have deconverted? And I spoke with somebody at length last Wednesday on Zoom. The guy was like the evangelical for atheism, and he just really has deconverted. And he asked me that very question, why are you a Christian? Why? And we couldn't get into it because my son interrupted me and we had to get off of Zoom. But I had to sit down the last 3 days and talk about why I am. And there's just no reason, there's no getting around for me the heart of embodied love. I just can't get around it. And that God would embody himself in, in a way that we could understand who they, the Godhead, whatever you want to take, are like, because everybody was getting it wrong. All the Bible scholars of the Old Testament were getting him wrong. A lot of them were getting him wrong. So how else are you going to do it except maybe come in bodily form and upend those kind of systems? And so for me, it's the transformational love of Jesus that keeps me a Christian.
Madeline Langle went through deconstruction, I think, before there was a word for it. And she made a comment once. She said, when I see what men have done to this church, I go in and out of atheism. Yes. But I keep coming back to Christ. And I think that resonates with everyone here. I was asked a question by JS about Ben Stanhope. It says, Ben Stanhope has gone through deconstruction and is no longer calling himself a Christian. What do I think? Mm-hmm. I'll give a quick answer to that right now. We've had Ben on the show. We love him. He's a great scholar. And I understand it. To use an analogy that C.S. Lewis used, though, he talked about our home being like not at the top of a mountain, but a mile up on a mountain. And when we're right under our home, distance-wise, we're close to it. We're only a mile from it. But to actually get to it, we have to take the mountain road and wind around and go further away from our home before we actually get nearer. And we're actually nearer when we're further away from it. So one of my answers to people who worry about deconstruction, I tell parents, is don't worry. They're on a path and they're seeking truth. And if you believe that God is truth, you should be right there with them, cheering them on. So I love Ben. Mm-hmm. I don't think God thinks less of Ben because he's having questions. I hope that answers your question, JS. We don't have a lot of time left, ladies. I guess I'd like to ask you this. One of the atheist comments earlier in the week about having you two on the show is like, why are you bothering with this? If you've outgrown it, was the comment. So why deconstructed mamas? I think I know why. Brennan Manning has a great quote on it. I think I know why you're doing this. But I'd like to give you guys a chance to answer yourselves and maybe give us a preview of what's coming up on season 2 of your podcast. So why?
Well, I'll talk a little bit about mamas. Yeah, I'll talk about that and then I'll let Esther talk about our season and what's coming up for us. Deconstructing mamas was really like born out of a place of just me feeling like I needed a community for my own deconstruction. And Esther and I just deciding to build it. You can find people on both sides, right? You can find people that kind of hate deconstruction. Then you can find people that are like fueling this sort of deconstruction hate fire. And we wanted this place somewhere in the middle where people just feel supported and loved no matter which direction that they're going. We created it. And our hope is that, people who are in a position of deconstructing just feel like someone understands them. They're not alone. We've talked with people who are going through like real mental health crises because they're deconstructing and they feel like everybody, who maybe they used to connect with, from their church thinks that they're the worst person now. And so they feel like no one loves them and no one accepts them. And you know, it's really, really tricky and really, really hard. And so we just want to create a safe space for conversation about it. I know we talked a little bit earlier about, we believe that the church can be something good. And, we believe in the beauty of having a true Christ-like faith. And so, I think Esther and I we both really like to help fuel transformation, I think, in a lot of ways. And so this is our space where we want to see Christianity transformed, and we want to see it kind of come back to its purest roots, and we want to see the church changing, and we're really passionate about that. And so we're here fighting for that, and we're just not ready to let it go. We're just not ready to. We still both, I think I can speak for you, Esther, we both still deep in our souls just really resonate with our religion and our faith. So
yeah, and I think to your question too is I don't know exactly the Brennan Manning quote, but if I know anything about Brennan Manning, it's that he wants people to sit in the pain with other people. And even if I ever move beyond it, I've moved beyond parenting teenagers, but I care about parents of teenagers. I've moved beyond parents of young kids, but I love Liz and all that she's going through. So we want to be a place where we sit in the pit with people in pain and give them a space to heal. And that's kind of where we are. And I don't care that we've moved beyond. I don't know. And plus, I don't know how much we've moved beyond it anyway. We're in some pain ourselves and on a journey to healing. And we've gotten a lot of freedom and healing. So we're very excited about our season two. We're just so excited, so excited about it. We have people like Brian McLaren is coming on to talk about the space of harmony that he talks about it in his Faith After Doubt. And that's sort of where we want to bring people from, if you read his book, From Perplexity into a Space of Harmony. And then Joy Vetterlein, who's a new voice on the deconstructing scene. She's fabulous. And then Angela Harrington is a person who is a whole deconstructing coach. We have a couple friends. Liz's dad is coming back to dive a little deeper into what we do with deconstructing and parenting. We have a pastor, Ben Creamer, a woman, Deneen Akers, who's been pretty involved at Evolving Faith. We have someone dealing with purity culture. We have a gentle, conscious parenting coach. We have Danielle Schroyer, who wrote Original Blessing, who is a spiritual director. And so all kind of people and then we have one therapist coming on too, who helps people out of, who've been harmed, and they're actually in mental health counseling as a result. So all under the guise of how to do this well in parenting and how not to continue to break the cycles of that toxic religious system starting with you and then bringing that to your own kids. So we have a great season coming up. We're thrilled. Liz and I will also be on talking about just our own stuff too. So yeah.
Well, thank you for that. I'm going to actually give Christine the last word, but first I'll share Brennan's quote, and he says, in a futile attempt to erase our past, we deprive the community of our healing gift. If we conceal our wounds out of fear and shame, our inner darkness cannot neither be illuminated nor become a light for others. So I see the grace and space that you two offer online as a light for others. I know deconstruction isn't just all liberating. It isn't all excitement. That certainly is a part of it, but some of it is alienation. Some of it is shame, dealing with the shame, depending on your level of commitment to your previous beliefs. It's just, there's so many things that are wrapped up with deconstruction that could really be harmful. It is nice to have a community to talk it through with, a support group, and certainly Deconstructing Mamas is one of our favorites. So, Christine?
So I was in a conversation with a friend, acquaintance, who has been going through a deconstruction process and wrestling with his faith, and at the moment would probably not consider himself a Christian. he, during this process, he had reached out to a friend or two who are like apologists, with some of his questions. And he felt like he only got circular answers, that they just, this is true because the Bible says it's true because it's in the Bible, kind of circular answers and circular reasoning. And he just really felt like the modern apologetics was only really for people who already believed, to be reaffirmed that they were believing what they should believe. So how has modern apologetics failed people who are wrestling with questions? And one of his questions, if you could specifically answer, he had a question about faith and what is biblical faith? What does that mean? Is it just kind of a blind faith that we should just believe based on these circular arguments? Or is there something different about biblical faith? So thanks.
Yeah, I think something that's just so concerning to me is, you know, this message that we get to no longer trust ourselves. You know, we're like constantly looking outside for validation, and, you know, largely, right, in the evangelical church, it's like, look at the Bible. The Bible tells you everything that you need to know. But, you know, what about the Holy Spirit? What about, you know, what about this piece of ourselves that actually is a part of God and the universe and all of that? What about listening to our own selves? And, you know, I found that when I'm listening to my own self, when I'm healing from within, when I'm listening to what I need, I'm more connected to myself. I'm more connected to God. I'm more connected to others. But we're told not to, just not to trust ourselves. We're told to just to trust what you know, to keep your head down. If you trust yourself, you're going to land yourself in a horrible place. But for me, trusting myself has actually given me more answers. And I hate to say that because, you know, embrace the uncertainty, but it's given me more answers, more soul answers than not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think about what you're saying. The circular argument is really hard for me. I'm sorry.
I think we had some feedback. Just go ahead, Esther.
Oh, okay. The circular answers are really hard for me because it's hard to be in conversation when people are in circular answers. And like the Bible says it's the word of God. I'm like, oh, okay. well, that just, you know, if you have any kind of critical thinking and you're in a classroom, I don't think you're allowed to use that in your, you know, especially if you're on a debate team. So it doesn't work anymore for young people and anybody who's ever grown up with critical thinking. And so I would say to that person, hey, instead of going to apologetists that are only in line and only trying to find the stuff and in those circular arguments, find places like the Bible for Normal People, find places like, you know, communities, reach out to Brian McLaren. There are a lot of theologians now in apologetics, people who have deconstructed and are coming out and talking about it. So there's definitely communities online that offer that, and probably some communities. It's so interesting. I think earlier you said, are there any churches out there that are like this? And because of COVID, thank goodness, the great gift of COVID is that we get to listen to whatever we want on Sunday morning. And there are fantastic people out there like your podcast, right? Oh, thank you. And the people that you bring on that are willing to go to those hard places, that are not just going to say, well, the Bible said it. So yeah, that's what I would say. You. Listen to your podcast.
Yeah. Your comments are so rich there because, you know, a lot of people think that the Bible is just one cohesive voice, and the Bible may have all the answers, but they don't agree with it. Authors certainly don't agree with each other. And that's one of the things I like that I learned from your father, Liz, no, they have arguments. That was the whole kind of, understanding of like Jewish scripture is they didn't see it as an end of a conversation. They saw it as the beginning of one. And maybe if we start looking at the Bible in that way again, it won't cause so many people to stumble. But you're right, yeah. And you know, I don't quote the Apostle Paul a lot, Liz, but you kind of confirmed in what he says in Romans 1 when he's talking about our accountability before God. He doesn't bring up our understanding of Scripture. He says, you know, just our awareness of creation and also the conscience within. And I think so many mm-hmm. Christians today beat up on that idea that our heart mm-hmm. can't be trusted, you know, even though we're created in the image of God and God has written eternity on our hearts, somehow it has turned into, you know, this horrible demonic culprit that we can't trust. And, you know, we have to dot every I and cross every T with a Bible verse. And so I'm so glad you brought that up. Folks, if any of you are going through deconstruction, you don't have to walk alone. And one of the great places to visit really is the Deconstructed Mamas. We've just had the pleasure of listening to Esther and Liz for about an hour. We're going to let you go, but we're so glad we got you on and we could introduce you to our audience. Christine is right. Most of our audience is going through maybe a faith crisis due to church's reception or maybe denial of science. And so this is something a little bit different from us having you guys on the air, but we realize, as Christine just mentioned, her friend really wasn't talking about the denial of science and his new rejection of God, but the idea that what he was taught just doesn't make sense and he's not getting any good answers. Folks, there are people out there that might not have all the answers, but they might have some really good questions that will help you along the way. And so thank you, ladies, for joining us.
Thanks for keeping with us today.